On the Score is a production of Film Music Magazine, the home of film and television music on the internet at filmmusicmag.com.
I'm Daniel Schweiger, and welcome to On the Score at filmmusicmag.com, sponsored by La La Land Records. Perhaps not since Alfred Hitchcock teamed with Bernard Herrmann to scare millions of moviegoers out of their showers has a directing and composing team put one single screaming thought through audiences' heads. And that question just might be, what's your favorite scary movie? The answer for Wes Craven and Marco Beltrami not only includes four Scream movies, but three other chilling pictures in the collaboration that began with Ghostface's first appearance in 1996's Scream. Beltrami's shrieking musical stabs, slices, and dices, not to mention impressive icy themes and relentless, full-blooded melodic suspense, have gone on to become what we hear today as the modern horror score, helping to make the filmmaker who ushered in a new age of shock cinema with 1972's The Last House on the Left just as relevant for today's fear-seeking teenagers, a new generation of which are under Ghostface's knife again for Scream 4. Now here to talk about a truly terrifying partnership whose creativity shows no signs of dying anytime soon is composer Marco Beltrami and director Wes Craven. Welcome to On the Score.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Now, Marco, before Scream came along and someone would say a Wes Craven film to you, what did it connote? Had you seen Nightmare on Elm Street or Last House before you ever came aboard Scream?
I hadn't, actually. I knew of the movies that he had done, I just hadn't seen them. In fact, in Scream 1, the first time that we were sitting through a screening of the movie, I sat next to Wes, and there's all these references to previous horror movies, a lot of which he did. I remember not getting most of the humor. that's something that was sort of vacant in my repertoire.
Now, Wes, how did you first become aware of Marco's music, and what about it appealed to you?
Marco was part of a home invasion team, broke into our house and went through some of our sheet music that we had. he was just a teenager. we were working on the first Scream, and I had an assistant named Julie Pleck, who was aware that we were looking at composers and searching for somebody with a very special sound. And she went home that night, as she tells me, and went online to a sort of a chat site for assistance, of all things, to various people in Hollywood, and said, does anybody know of a young composer? We're looking for somebody new. And somebody recommended a 2 or 3 Q sampler that Marco had. And I shortly had a CD of it and listened to it, and I just thought, this is wonderful. This is beautiful music. It had what has become Sid's theme as part of it, this sort of haunting, semi-lilting, semi-mournful, young woman's voice. So on. And it just, it just stuck in my mind. So we looked him up, and kind of the relationship began. He convinced the studio that we could go with somebody who didn't have that much experience in Hollywood, and what a wonderful find.
I actually remember that process well, because it was probably the most terrifying time in my career, because I remember you and Patrick Lussier, who was editing at the time, called me in, and they said, okay, well, we like your music. Let me show you the opening of the scene. You showed me that Drew Barrymore scene, which was like a 12-minute or 13-minute, I don't know how long it was, scene. And Wes was like, well, we have a screening in New Jersey next week, and we'd like to try if you have some music. Maybe you can write a piece of music for us and bring it to us. And this was on a Friday, and so bring it back Monday morning. And so I didn't even have a studio at that point, so I had to call up friends, and I was frantically trying to, I actually used Chris Beck's studio. And it was really nerve-wracking. It was a 12-minute cue, the opening cue of the film. So, but And it tested really well. It got like an 87 or something.
Yeah, it was Secaucus, New Jersey, and we tested it and went through the roof. Bob and Harvey Weinstein were there. Harvey was sitting behind Bob throwing M&Ms at the back of his head. I remember that very clearly. And the audience was just going berserk. And after the screening, everybody was very, very happy. The scores were extraordinarily high. And
you called me up and you said, well, Marco, you got the job if you want.
It was quite amazing. I mean, we never had another test screening. The film just, that was it. And I think two nights later, or actually that later that night when we all went out to dinner to congratulate ourselves, Bob and Harvey showed up and said, we want to offer you a three-picture deal. One could be anything you want from things that we own, which turned out to be Music of the Heart, and the other two need to be Scream 2 and 3. So that's how I got into the screen business, and that's how Marco came along and made it musically so profoundly interesting.
Now, the first Scream score really set the tone for the entire series. Could you talk about how you developed the score and the sound of it together?
Well, as Wes mentioned briefly, there was a one of the things I had done previously, there was a girl who I'd known at college. Her name was Rose Thompson, and she did some vocal stuff for me that I took her voice and processed it electronically, and she also did some like whistling type stuff that was behind it, and I think that was some of the stuff that appealed to Wes about it, the unique character of it. It wasn't anything really orchestral at that point, but I think that there was that aspect, and then realizing that that the movie was had, you know, a little bit of could afford to go a little bit over the top in some areas orchestrally and all. So I think that sort of guided what, you know, my initial instincts were.
Wes, what were you looking for just in general with the score, the balance of like, because again, it's a very self-aware of its origins. You know, it's always making fun of genre conventions, but yet the music has to fit those genre conventions while also winking at it. How far did you want to go in that direction?
Well, I don't think we were, you know, lampooning the music of horror films, but wanted something that was kind of sounded like them, but then changed and shifted and became more sophisticated and in some ways more lyrical. That you know, kind of musical line, which I called Sid's theme, was one of the first things to just capture me, because that became, you know, just stood for Neve Campbell's character, a sort of an innocence, a sort of a sadness. The character had lost her mother, and in the course of the picture, finds many things out about her mother's past that were less than wonderfully maternal. And the music just kind of wrapped around this portrayal of this young girl in a way that was very dramatic in a very sensitive and haunting way. And I think that was one of the most interesting things about the character for me. So to have it captured musically so early on was a remarkable gift. And I was always telling Marco, you know, theme. I need themes that you can recognize, and he gave me these wonderful themes that have lasted for now into four films that haven't exhausted themselves and have been able to be built upon. So Marco's always open to experimentation and unusual instrumentation, and he's a real musician, you know, and as opposed to some people that just kind of crank it out. I've had to force him to give me little kits of Stings and Bernard Herrmann screeches every once in a while.
Well, I mean, maybe one of the things that helped characterize the score was sort of my ignorance of the genre. I was familiar with Bernard Herrmann's music, but I really hadn't seen any of the classic horror movies, only because I always found myself to be sort of a very, like a cheap scare, you know, and you know, even watching Scream early on, I, you know, I had to turn away. You know, so I...
While conducting. Those sort of tacit moments. That's Mark will turn it away.
So I couldn't really rely too much on cliches that I knew of. I relied on things I had studied, 20th century music techniques and all, and some of the rhythmical odd meter stuff of Bernard Herrmann that he had used and all, but that was about the limit of my knowledge. The other thing interesting, I think, is that, you know, when we started Scream, eventually they made a lot of money, but the first one was really sort of a low budget picture, so I had to scrape together all the resources that we had, and you know, as I mentioned, one of the things was we had people whistling. Well, I didn't have enough people, so I had to get Wes and the whole, you know, the producers and everybody out there with the orchestra to join in. They sat behind the violins and added their voices on the score.
Marco said, "You know how to whistle, don't you? Just put your lips together and blow."
I was going to say that you're psychic. You got that from me. How do you think the Scream scores have developed to the knife's point of Scream 4?
I think there's, you know, with Sid's character, there's been a thematic continuity through all the movies, and in that way, her theme has been able to be employed. It developed over the course of the movies. In the first two, it was always in a minor key. Finally, at the end of the third, when she comes out and she's actually wearing a dress for the first time, and everything seems happy, we actually put it in a major key. But then coming, the interesting thing, I think the real fun, one of the fun challenges of this movie was that somebody is modeling their killing off of what Sidney's character is doing. I'm very self-aware now, not to try to reveal anything, but so that the theme was able to adapt and sort of distort, if you will, in certain ways to accommodate sort of like imitation.
Wes, how new did you want the score of Scream 4 to be?
Well, you know, I don't think about that because I don't worry about that with Marco. I mean, he's always bringing, I think, his own latest ideas to it. I did want it to be recognizable, and such theme, as Marco said, is used and intertwined with, you know, the voices, in a sense, the musical voices of other characters. But I don't know. I think more than anything, it was just the innovation of exploring sort of the use of echoes of Sidney in other people and other places in a way that I think we did more ambitiously than ever before.
What do you think, Marco?
The only, I guess, directive I had from, actually not from Wes, but from the company, Weinstein Company, was that the previous Scream movies, which had been used in the temp, had been working really well, and that they wanted to keep that flavor of it. And I said, great, we need a good budget. I think there was a... you know, the film had a continuity from the previous movies, and I think so too the music needed to reflect that, as well as the fact that time had passed and, you know, Wes was doing new creative things with the characters, and so too the music should reflect that. So, you know, to be in sync with the picture. There's Sidney's theme. There's also, you know, one of the more humorous aspects is this character Dewey, the policeman, and so there we had thematic elements that had developed for him, his character as well, which we used in this movie. So there is continuity, but it's a reflection of the past by presented in new with new materials, hopefully.
You know, listening to the score, Wes, it seems like it's lighter, as it were. There's more fun in the score, and I haven't seen the film, but it just seems to be a lighter tone.
Well, we just do that to lure you into a sense of complacency before we hit you over the head with the mallet. I don't know. You know, the film does have humor. In the making of the film, we always were aware that, first of all, of the Scary Movie series, so we didn't want to go that far at all. But there is, just in the characters themselves, there is wit and there is irony, and I think that's always been part of one character or another in the Scream series. So there is that, but there's also just huge, you know, action themes and wonderful suspense themes that I think are more developed than ever. Obviously Marco's career has gone on to afford him to work with immense orchestras, and now he's learned how to imitate them with tiny little orchestras from Eastern Europe. We should talk about, you know, the hoops Marco had to go to get this through, to get to the sound.
How did he do it?
There was definitely some challenges. I was a little bit worried because although I mentioned the film was temped with music from the previous movies, there really wasn't the budget for doing that kind of a score, but yet we wanted to. So it was... That was probably one of the biggest challenges, finding musicians that could do it and achieve what we needed to do.
For the price, which was very low. But his fee was enormous. That's where all the money went.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's a staple of horror films, going back to the beginning, where you have someone walking around for a very long time before someone pounces out with a knife, hammer, spear gun, and kills them. How do you make those scenes visually and musically interesting?
Well, I think it's always a guessing game that you're playing with the audience. That, you know, you have the cliches of a million horror films, going all the way back to Hitchcock and before. So... both visually, situationally, and I'm sure musically, you have to be aware of what's been done before, what the expectation of the smartest members of the audience are, and then you have to subvert that. So, it's constantly being on your toes. It's a very smart audience, and it's an audience obsessed with figuring things out before anybody else, you know? So I know visually it's just, if you're going down a hallway and it, for sure somebody's going to jump out of that doorway, then you cannot have somebody jump out of that doorway. But if the character turns around to scratch their nose, you can have somebody jump out of their nose. I mean, it's almost that absurd, but, you know, it's constantly avoiding the cliche.
And musically, I have to say a lot of how I approach this stuff was taught to me by Wes when we were working on the first and second Scream movies. For instance... if you want to create a feeling of unrest and suspense, uneasiness among the audience, you can have this dissonant music or something that is causing something where it might not even be a visual reference at that point. But yet, if someone is going to jump out of the closet or the doorway or something, sometimes it's often best not to have music that builds up to that event, but actually you take the music out, that actually can heighten the suspense and the uneasiness, and make the scare that much more profound. So, you know, things like that I sort of learned as I went along. And, I think Wes is the ultimate master at this stuff, so... this whole thing has been a learning experience as well.
Now, Marco, with so many shrieking, dissonant musical stabs that you essentially have to have in all of these films, do you ever have the feeling that the kind of modern, impressionistic music that you get from composers like Ligeti and Penderecki has essentially been reincarnated as horror music?
I've certainly employed some of the extended techniques and all that for instance, these composers that you mentioned have developed. But I would say that, you know, it takes more than just a stab or a shriek to develop a style, and that while I may have borrowed ideas, it's certainly in no way a I wouldn't be so bold to say it was a reincarnation of their music. More just borrowing some of their techniques.
Wes, how important is silence in a horror film?
Well, you know, I think that the sort of negative space, the air around the, you know, the sculpture of David or whatever it is as important almost as the creation itself. It's, as Marco said, you know, sometimes it's as powerful just for the music to stop, and then the audience is acutely aware of silence. And you can play with very minute sounds. I mean, I grew up, I'm very extremely old, so I grew up on radio, you know, as a young kid, and really learned the value of silence and sound as creating whole worlds in the minds of the audience. So you can do that musically by having the music just fall off in volume and instrumentation, so that's quite small. Or sometimes you can just remove music for a moment. And then you have to play with that expectation, because horror audiences get very sophisticated, and then they know if the music stops, somebody's got to jump out from the doorway. So then you have to maybe just begin a musical phrase that clearly needs five notes to be completed, and you hit them on the third note. Or, you know, there's that constant sort of cat and mouse you're playing with the audience. But you can.
Sure, I have to remember that.
You can easily overscore, you know, and. We're always, you know, we have these spotting sessions. I can remember back on the first one with Patrick Lussier and myself saying, okay, Marco, so you should start here, and then we're going to, yeah, keep playing. Yeah, you're still playing here. We're like, yeah. 7 minutes or 8 minutes in the thing. And, I don't know what the average amount of score per scream is, but it's an immense amount of music.
A lot. It actually went up. The first one had somewhere in the neighborhood of 70 by the the last one, I think we were over 90 minutes of music. It was like wall to wall. It was 110 minutes or something from the movie.
Yeah, it's the Ben-Hur of scoring.
Yeah.
It seems ever since the days of Scream, you get a lot of horror movies and horror scores where they're just trying to scare you, but the scares aren't there, that the music is just trying to do the job where the film isn't doing the job. Do you ever get an impression watching a horror film that the music is just trying so hard?
Yeah, I think there's probably more horror movies made than any other type of, and the vast majority of them are you know, just sort of crappy. But sometimes they ask the music to make up for deficiencies that might be in the film itself, which is never a fun task for a composer.
Do you think, when you've known each other for so long at this point, is there like a shorthand that just comes in musically where, okay, you know what to do, see you later?
Well, Scream 4, I think, was largely done with sort of a shorthand. We did get together early on, but it was really a very tight schedule overall. Yeah. Wes was doing a million things at the same time that we needed to be scoring, so we had a general spotting. But that was pretty much basically just using the temp as a guide as to what worked and all. But, you know, this is the first time that Wes didn't actually come by to the studio to hear cues and all. It was just not practical. So we would make up quick times and send the music that way. I think in many respects it was more of a shorthand.
Like, I guess Marco knows what he's doing. I'll see at the scoring stage.
I hope, yeah. No. No, yeah, there is that. You know, but no director, even for the pleasure factor of just working with Marco and going listening to themes and music and putting in suggestions that screw him up for a week and end up going back to where he was in the first place. This shoot, you know, had a lot of things that took my attention away from some of the post-production parts that normally I would be there for, at least to, you know, have conversations and to listen to preliminary things. But we had to kind of do it through, as Marco said, through quick times, ways, things like that. It was, you know, it was a very difficult process in many ways because of, you know, certain delays and then having to get things done very, very quickly towards the end. And this was one of the harder shoots, you know, for me, just because of changes and, you know, things that just kept me up working almost 20 hours a day for long periods of time and no time to, you know, get in the car and drive to Marco's new studio, which is in Albuquerque, actually. Not really, but it seems like it.
It is far. Yeah. It's a long drive.
Yeah. I think there's a message there from Marco. So, yeah, you can come by. I got a jet.
Yeah. Where do both of you see the Scream scores and the Scream saga going?
More of that dramatic silence. Well, I do know that when I had dinner with Kevin Williamson, the writer of this edition, as well as the founder of the whole concept and writer of the original scripts, he was thinking of a new trilogy. So that means potentially that there are two more Screams and two more opportunities to expand the musical wonders of it.
Huh, great. you know, I sort of follow Wes's lead, and that for me, you know, Scream was really my first movie, and so anything that Wes does, I'm very interested in. I really feel like I've developed as a composer working with Wes over the years.
Now, The Word Together has also included the werewolf comedy horror film Cursed and the Freddy-esque My Soul to Take, yet you also both did a very effective straight suspense movie called Red Eye. Now, do you think it opened both of you up to doing more non-genre films together? Do you want to do more off-topic films and scores together?
Well, for me, certainly, yeah. I mean, I just personally would love to be doing things more farther from the genre, not, you know, that I hate the genre, obviously I've been in for many, many films, but the Red Eye, for instance, was a great chance to move into thriller territory, get a little bit more sophisticated, and just different from Scream. I think Marco, his career has taken him in many, many different directions, so he might have had a little bit more of a chance to do a variety of things, but I just feel like, in some ways, it's important for me to keep expanding in what I'm doing. I mean, of course, I've just finished Scream 4, but you know, that it really was nice for me to branch out and do other kinds of films and have Marco helping me out with that kind of thing, too.
What do you think about doing music from The Heart Part 2? Or a movie like that?
Yeah, no, I think it's... I started in horror movies, and I certainly enjoyed doing them, but I, you know, musically speaking, my ideas are not limited to a particular genre. I think the only thing I'm not too fond of is romantic comedies, just because I'm more scared of them than horror movies. But definitely, I think it'd be great.
Wes, do you think Scream changed the face of horror movies and horror music?
Well, I think what Scream accomplished really goes back to Bob Weinstein, in that he approached it very much like, let's do Class A level film. So rather than, you know, although by post-production, poor Marco's always being left with less money than he deserves to be doing his scores and so forth. Not to say we have one violinist in a booth, like tripling and quadrupling himself. That's not true. But, you know, Bob always went for the kind of the world-class actors. He got Drew Barrymore to open Scream, and then, you know, was comfortable with getting, you know, killing her off after 15 minutes when he easily could have insisted she do another role or even Dev Campbell's role. So in that sense, I think, it's been something where you're dealing with trying to get the best of everything and moving up horror films out of just being kind of a B movie into something that can redefine it just by its sort of classiness and smartness and combination of humor and horror and even lyricism. And those are things that just I don't even know if Bob quite knew how to talk about it in those terms, but he was always pushing for it to be better and better. And you know, as the movies made money, he always kind of turned the money back into the next movie, so that our budget expanded and we got better and better materials all the way through, including an encouragement to have really great rich scores. So it's just made it. I think in some ways it's legitimatized it in a way that had not happened before.
After Scream, there was a lot of awareness of the Scream movies, and especially for other genre movies that took place. I know musically, people would refer to it the Scream scores, but as films as a whole. So I think, yeah, they were definitely impacted the genre as a whole.
Now, Marco, you have a completely different score coming out this month, which is for Soul Surfer. And there's one bit in it that could definitely work just fine in Scream 4. But what's it like to go from savagely killing teenagers to hanging 10 with them in Hawaii?
It's all part of the psyche of the teenager. Actually, that's one of the things I think Wes really gets really well. A very different kind of movie. For me, it's refreshing to sort of move around stylistically and work in different genres. This is much more of a family film, inspirational, motivational movie, and a lot more consonant, a lot more tonal. I relied heavily on indigenous Hawaiian music as inspiration.
Yeah, it's a really quite beautiful score. Could you tell a little bit more about how well you've incorporated Hawaiian music into an orchestral kind of pop energy feel for the character?
Well, when I first saw the movie, it's really about this girl that is brought up in Hawaii. She's Hawaiian, Hawaiian parents, and she's a surfer there. And the movie's shot in Hawaii for most of it. There's a little part where she goes to Thailand. But even there, she brings the spirit of Hawaii with her. And the one thing I picked up on the first time seeing the movie was that the temp music, the music that they had, didn't reflect any of the spirit of Hawaii. And I thought that was, if I could do anything as a composer, that would be to ingrain some of that into the film, because I think that would give it the dimension that it needed. And so it turned out I had, we just built the studio, and the fire captain at the station down below, his wife actually taught hula. So they had a whole collection of musicians that we first listened to. He had some CDs that I listened to of just really traditional chants that had been around for a long time. And that's when I started thinking, wow, it'd be so cool to incorporate this into the movie. And I had him, Captain Lowell, come up and bring some of the Hawaiian percussionists and chanters and met some really great people, really learned a lot about the Hawaiian musical culture. And again, you know, that's the best kind of project for me, where I'm learning as I go.
What do you think it takes for a composer-collaborator relationship to keep going for this long?
A lot of separation. You know what I think it is? It's a real fondness and respect for each other. That's at least what I feel. I don't know what he thinks about me. Probably hates me. But no. But I think we really enjoy each other's company. I think Marco's really gifted. I'll leave it at that. And it's a pleasure. And you know, I have just enough of a musical background to be able to talk to him a little bit in musical terms, and you know, and composers and ideas I have. He kind of knows what I'm talking about very quickly. And that's invaluable, you know. And that is a shorthand buildup over, you know, whatever it's 15, 16 years now that we've been working together.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's, there's a commonality of idea which seems to work well. And I don't know, I guess we just sort of get each other for what we're doing.
Marco and Wes, it's been great having you on The Score. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Scream 4 opens in theaters April 15th with its Score CD on Vares Saraband Records, and the Marco scored Soul Surfer opens April 8th with its Score online at Madison Gate Records. Our show has been engineered and edited by Jamie Umbrus and produced by Mark Northam. And special thanks to our sponsor, La La Land Records, whose releases include special editions of Ernest Gold's It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, John Morris's Clue, Mark Mancini's The Money Train, and Marco Beltrami and Buck Sanders' Max Payne. Find these soundtracks and more at lalalandrecords.com. And I'm Daniel Schweiger, showing you how it's music that makes the movies groove at On the Score at filmmusicmag.com.
On the Score is a production of Film Music Magazine, the home of film and television music on the internet at filmmusicmag.com.